Welcome to Energy Thinks, a podcast about how the oil and gas industry will lead into the energy future. I'm Tisha Schuler, your host and the CEO of Adamantine Energy. This year, 2024, I'm focusing on two essential ingredients for energy leadership, and you're going to hear both of them today. The first is a vision for the energy future that engages and compels our often skeptical stakeholders. And the second element is executing on the nuts and bolts of that vision, which is how is your company going to demonstrate that it means business through execution? And today I speak with Brian Levinka. He's Vice President of New Energy Ventures and Corporate Strategic Development at Williams. I wanted to talk to Brian because he leads both a decarbonization-focused business development team, and he tells it like it is. His team is developing and executing projects you'll hear about across the energy spectrum: solar, wind, renewable natural gas, energy storage, differentiated gas, hydrogen, and carbon capture, utilization and storage. Brian received a BS in chemical engineering from Texas A&M. Prior to joining Williams, he was a project manager at Cheniere, Audubon Engineering, and DCP Midstream. You can learn more about Brian in our show notes. I think you're going to find a lot interesting, particularly his insights for those starting new energy ventures and those within base business who want to prepare themselves for the energy future. Here's my conversation with Brian Levinka. Brian Levinka, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me on the Energy Thinks podcast.
Thanks, Tisha. Great to be here. I appreciate you having me and look forward to the conversation today.
So you became head of New Energy Ventures for Williams several years ago. And when you took that job, it was a novel title and exciting. Today, we know that the jobs like yours are some of the hardest in the industry, and that's why I wanted to have you on today to talk about that. So can you tell our audience a little bit about your responsibilities today, and how do those responsibilities differ from the job you thought you were taking on a few years ago?
Yeah, I'd say it's still exciting. That definitely has not changed, but things have changed over the last 4 years since I took this role at Williams. In terms of my responsibilities, I'd say to define New Energy Ventures and what that means for Williams, you kind of have to know what is Williams to begin with. You know, we're a large-scale natural gas infrastructure company. We move gas from the Gulf Coast to the Northeast, from the Rockies to the Pac Northwest. We're a robust midstream company. And so New Energy Ventures within that means something different to us than it probably means to other people. But for us, in a nutshell, I'd say we are all things decarbonization for Williams. We are focused on reducing our carbon footprint, but also, you know, we are a publicly traded company. We are focused on making money. And so that's a big part of my job and my team's job is business development around new technologies. When you think back to when we started NEV, really in 2020, March of 20 is when I took this job.
What could go wrong in March of 20? A very different time in the world.
Yeah. You know, at this time, my family and my two young kids and my wife and I are relocating to Tulsa on March 17th of 2020, just hoping that the moving van shows up. What a crazy time. But when you look at how things have changed since then, the energy and the excitement is still there, but I'd say a lot has moved around. Interest rates change, investor sentiment changes, technology changes, policy changes. And so it's been a roller coaster, to say the least, a mostly positive roller coaster. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going in the right direction. It's going up, which is great, but it's incredibly challenging. But that is the exciting part about it is every day we're learning something new. You know, if you go back and look at my resume, there was nothing about energy transition or anything like this before. So day one was starting that learning curve. And we've been trying to just kind of come down that curve really for the last 4 years, get educated, help our team get educated, help our executives get educated, and then really figure out what makes sense for us as Williams. You know, our answer will be different than everybody else's answer because of who we are and because of the values we have as a company. So that's our task, is to figure out, you know, how do we achieve our climate commitment? How do we hit these goals that we've set that I'd say are pretty aggressive? But how do we do it in a way that's practical and that aligns with what investors want out of our company?
One of the things I love about Williams is that pragmatic approach that you have, like the unabashed, like we're charged with decarbonization and we're charged with making money. Because that's the reality that did get lost in 2020 and a lot of companies' commitments was that, like, what is that going to mean, that crafting that middle ground? So given your pragmatic approach, what's a new energy venture that you could provide as an example of something that you're proud of, something that's working?
There's a few. I would say to start, I'm probably most proud of just where we are in the overall process. I mean, when you start from a conversation around like, go figure out decarbonization, that can go so many different ways. And it's a very wide fairway to play in. The biggest task that we had to begin this group was really figuring out, how do we narrow that? How do we focus on things that actually make sense? And also, like, how do you measure success? Like, what does good look like in this arena that you're playing in? And so it was a lot of just trying to define and answer those questions. Like, where do we want to focus our energy? What technologies work for us? What types of policies that are already there can we fit into our overall corporate makeup and our current financial situations? And then go beyond that, Williams is an infrastructure company. How can we tie this to what we are good at, which is infrastructure? What are the existing competencies that we have and the competitive advantages that we have to really even step into this space? So, like, why should we be relevant in a decarbonization, you know, overall economy? What can we bring to the table? So step one was just like defining what is that. And I'm very proud of the progress we've made. It's been iterative. It hasn't been a straight line. We've gone in different directions at times, but overall, I'd say we continue to get better and we continue to get more focused and better define what are we going to do, but also what are we not going to do. And in a company as big as Williams, and you know, we've been around for over 100 years, doing something new in a company that's really good at a certain set of things has its own challenges. And so I'm very proud of where we are just as a group and the strategy that we've laid out. If you want to define that more clearly to like a specific initiative, I'm not proud of any of it. I think we've done a really damn good job of kind of defining, what does solar and storage mean for Williams? What mm-hmm. does carbon capture mean for Williams? What does differentiated gas or next gen gas mean for Williams? And what is the role we're going to play in each of those different sectors? And so we've sort of formed what I would say is a go-to-market strategy for each of those. And they're all different, but they're all meaningful and unique to us and things that we think we can go achieve. So that's for us like the key thing here. It's not rhetoric, it's not conversation, it's action. It's go do, go test, know that we're going to fail a little bit along the way, but keep getting better because of it. And the outcome is ultimately what we're striving for here. So I'm very proud of that overall process that we've been through. I could give you examples of each of them, but that would be a whole
we'll probably dig into some of those as we go. I hadn't thought about that before, that when you had this job, like, never mind, like the fairway was wide. Like, you're like, are we on the golf course? Like, are we on a football field? Like, what are, right. and then, so it's like, what's our playing field, and then narrowing it down. And one of the things I've always enjoyed working and talking with you, Brian, about this is you always get really clear about what you're doing and what you're not doing. And I think that's a lesson I learned from watching you engage in this over the last 4 years. One of the things I'd love to keep sort of narrating is, what have you learned along the way about working within a 100-year-old company? Although I love Williams, because Williams is unapologetic about being 100 years. Like, we've been here 100 years and we will be here the next 100, which is different than, say, like a utility mindset where you often have sort of a, like, this is the way we've always done it, you know, kind of mindset. But I would imagine that the tension with the base business is strong, although every initiative I've seen you engage in and every initiative you mentioned is like adjacent or additive to the base business. But how do you manage that? Like, are there battles internally between base business and new ventures? And like, I mean, that you care to share. And, you know, and I imagine the returns are different. Like, how do you navigate that?
Carefully, I think is the word, gently. Right. It's a great question. And it's something that I don't think I appreciated when I first stepped into this, of how much of my time and energy and our team's time and energy would go towards that exact effort of helping people understand not only what we're trying to achieve within an EV, but to your point, Tisha, the adjacency to our base business. Like, this is not meant to be some new step out business unit that's going to kind of survive on its own over here. Like, everything we're doing is incredibly tied to our base business, whether that's providing power to our own operations, whether that's capturing emissions off of our existing facilities, whether that's using infrastructure in a different way. All these things tied directly back to what we're doing every day. And so part of it was just providing that clarity of, we're not here to like take anybody's job. We're not here to take your customer. We're here to help provide a solution that we think the market is looking for and that our customers will appreciate. But also, you know, people are territorial. Like, this is my job. This is my asset. I have certain goals and expectations that have been set for me. I'm going to go focus on those, and everything you're bringing me, Brian and team, that's a distraction. In their fairness, it is. It is a mm-hmm. distraction. And so having to tell that story and help people understand what exactly we're trying to achieve and why ultimately it will be helpful for them. I mean, we're here to extend the life of our assets, to show how important natural gas is to the overall decarbonization story. Like, that's exactly what NEV is meant to do. And so the first step was definitely helping the internal stakeholders understand that and make sure that there weren't these, you know, battles or territorial wars or whatever it might be, but showing how we can add value to their assets and to their bottom lines as well. And so that's really what we focused on. And I think the other part of it that's been very helpful is when you look at our team, it's 95% people that are from the midstream space. So they know the base business. This is their home, and myself included in that. You know, I grew up in this space. Is every job I've ever had has been focused on midstream. And so knowing that and bringing that level of understanding of the base business, I think helps kind of massage that into the conversation. When it comes to your other question around, you know, returns and how does this compete within the broader capital stack, let's say, incredibly challenging part of this business. And when you're talking about real growth, getting returns that meet expectations of Williams investors within our business unit, that's very challenging. And so when you look back, you know, we talked about how things have changed since 2020, when interest rates were zero and people were throwing billions of dollars at this space because it was trendy and sexy and the cool thing to do. You know, that's great. That's not necessarily reality. I think you've mm-hmm. seen things kind of peel back into what is a more normal expectation moving forward around these projects have to actually perform. They have to return value to our shareholders, and they have to decarbonize. And so checking all those boxes is pretty challenging. I will say Williams, I think, is different in our peers in that we're actually serious about deploying the capital. We mm-hmm. are doing it. We are building real projects. We're standing behind it. And it's not just words, it's action. But it is tough to make these projects pencil. And I would also say, they are very different than the way we've made money in the last 100 years. You know, Williams is a natural gas infrastructure company. We are a fee-based business. We typically don't take huge amounts of risk. And the risk we do take is counterparty risk or commodity risk, things that we can get comfortable with and that we've known for a long time. When I take a project to our executive team and the risks I'm talking about are policy or renewable energy credits or tax credits, or technology risks, like those are things that are non-traditional risks for us. And so it does, you know, that learning curve for them and for everybody else is a little bit higher. It takes a more intentional approach. It takes a continuous approach because it's constantly mm-hmm. changing on our side. Mm-hmm. And so it's a different battle, but it's one that I think when done properly, you know, we've been able to achieve and get over those hurdles and get real projects, you know, moving forward.
I'm really glad you laid out the reality of making this business financially sustainable has changed and will continue to change, and that companies have to be serious about doing these projects to make money, not doing these projects for the ESG report, or they're just going to be little flashes in the pan. Before I want to come back to that, but before I do, I want to layer on a question about the personnel of the base business and the personnel of New Energy Ventures. One of the things I've been observing is that in companies where this is a little bit bifurcated, sometimes there's a sense that this cultural war against oil and gas gets taken up in New Energy Ventures. Like, aren't we betraying ourselves by doing this thing that the people that want to run us out of business want us to do? And I think the way you're navigating this is in many ways just setting a new conversation. Like the new conversation is about extending the assets, decarbonizing the assets. But I'm wondering if that, how does that culture war end up playing in for you? And how do you navigate it? Because I think it goes unsaid, but I actually think it's really important to a lot of the tensions that we have within companies. Like, why are we doing this thing that the people that hate us are asking us to do versus like, why aren't we extending our life? How do you navigate that?
Yeah, I think it kind of comes back to how do you message what you're doing and how do you educate people on what you're doing? Because it could very easily turn into you're building a solar facility and all that's really doing is reducing the demand for natural gas. Like that's our base business. Why would you ever do that? You're the enemy now. And, you know, if that's the way you want to look at it, fine. I think in reality, when you look at what we're doing, it is goes back to that conversation of complementary versus competitive. And so from the very beginning, we've been very clear about the intentions of New Energy Ventures. And Williams, in any lifetime, and I do think part of the reason that I was given this job is because we set these 2050 goals, and I'm the only one who will still be here in 2050 working on these goals. But in my lifetime, Williams is not going to be a renewables company. We are not going to be a solar company. Right. Like we will be a natural gas company. And so I think as long as people understand that, and I think it also goes back to the team and who's working on these projects, these are people that come from the base business, there's a certain understanding that what we're doing here is not meant to displace what we're currently doing or replace what we're currently doing. It's meant to enhance our offering to the market. And so I think we very quickly got past that, oh, this is what investors are telling us to do, so we're going to do it, and turned it into, this is a great way for us to not only continue to grow our business and have new areas to invest, but also to continue to show exactly why we're doing it, which is because natural gas, if you're serious about decarbonization, is the solution to decarbonization. So if it's a clean molecule, we can still make it cleaner. We can still make our business better. We can still answer the calls that are being put upon us from environmentalists and investors. But we can do it in a way that doesn't shy away from being proud about what we do every day, which is move natural gas.
That's great. I really like the way you're framing that. It offers a new way of thinking about this work that's not the polarized zero-sum game. Of course, as you know, I couldn't agree more that if you care about decarbonization, you care about this industry. And so I love the way you're approaching that. I want to return now to the idea you talked about risk, different risks, and a lot of the risk being policy risk. It's like opposition risk, you know, people being against anything that the industry wants to do, even if it's decarbonizing. You're one of the founders of the Clean Hydrogen Future Coalition. Can you talk a little bit about what you're hoping to accomplish there, why you're doing that, and what our listeners need to know about it? It was a new initiative to me, so I want to make sure if we need to be supporting their work that we're doing that. So give us your pitch.
Yeah, sure. Happy to. So the Clean Hydrogen Future Coalition is a group that got started about 3 years ago now. It's run by a firm out of DC, Van Ness Feldman. They kind of facilitate the group. Basically, in short, what it is a group of industry peers. It's a combination of energy companies, labor unions, utilities, NGOs, equipment manufacturers, project developers, really people all focused on the development of a clean hydrogen economy. I think when hydrogen first sort of caught the limelight 3-4 years ago, there was all this talk about colors of hydrogen and what's the best way to make it? What's the best way to use it? We very quickly saw that getting divisive and, you know, picking winners and losers ahead of reality. So the coalition was really meant to take a colorblind approach to how do you develop a true sustainable hydrogen economy that includes all different types of manufacturing, includes all different types of production, all different end use applications, and craft policy in a way that enables all of them, not trying to pick which color you like or which region of the United States you like. It's basically looking at how do we craft policy to help really develop a decarbonization product that can work anywhere. And so at this time, this was kind of back, you know, pre-IRA, pre-infrastructure, like pre-everything. And our focus was how do you create policy to help, number one, create a production tax credit, like some sort of way to incentivize the development of a hydrogen economy, which today doesn't really exist, especially not at scale. But also, how do you do that in a way that incentivizes demand and not just production? The last thing we want to do is create this great product and then nobody really wants to use it. So taking a balanced approach across the entire value chain. For Williams, obviously, our main focus there is infrastructure. How can we use our infrastructure to facilitate the development of a hydrogen economy? And we're doing that a number of different ways. But the CHFC is really a focus on crafting policy, educating stakeholders, educating regulators, making sure they understand the implications of the policy that is being crafted and put into place. And from an industry standpoint, you know, we're out there trying to build projects. Here are real data points on the decisions you're making and how they're impacting our ability to invest. And so if people aren't going to invest, policy is going to be worthless. So let's make sure we're doing it in a way that makes sense. So it's been a great initiative. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I'll tell you, I've spent more time in DC in the last 4 years than I ever thought I would have. I thoroughly enjoy that part of it. It's a lot of fun and you get to meet a lot of great people. And I think to just bring our voice and the industry's voice to the Hill is super important. Williams, we take a really, really targeted approach when it comes to government affairs, public outreach. We have a great team in DC and I've had a great team there for a number of years. So it's great to have those resources and great to engage. And it's also, I think, when you go talk to them constantly about FERC permitting and, you know, water permitting and EPA and regulations, bringing Williams with a different voice and a different topic, I think shows those people as well, hey, look, like, obviously, you know what we are, you know what Williams is, but we're doing these things too. And I think that does build some credibility and just gives you a voice that maybe we didn't have in the past.
There's a lot to love about what you just conveyed. One being just having these collaborative initiatives around policy. Building a hydrogen economy is going to be really freaking hard. And it's going to take support from groups that are used to opposing everything. It's going to take trade-offs, an understanding of trade-offs, and it's going to take a huge amount of coordination and collaboration. So I love that you're doing that. The thing that really strikes me, though, is that 10 years ago, an oil and gas executive who was charged with an operational mandate was not engaging in policy, right? Those were like different silos. And what I think I have observed Williams doing and a lot of companies that are becoming successful in this space is that the same executives charged with operations are engaging in policy. And that's what's going to have to happen. So we have the understanding both ways. Companies have to change the way they're doing business to get, like you said, the credibility and the respect. But policymakers need access to decision makers to see that they're for real. That's my observation. If you have someone who does just government affairs solely without operational responsibilities, you miss those collaborative opportunities. Has that been true in your experience? And do you think that's like the way that's a change that will probably stick? That like, if you're in ops, you're in government affairs now?
Whether you like it or not, I think absolutely.
And engineers didn't sign up for this, but that's what they're getting.
You're preaching to the choir here. Like yeah. that was never part of my my schooling. Was not, you know, how do you sit in front of Joe Manchin and talk to him about, you know, policy and why we can't build projects, right? I think when you look back at the things that you learn, that's definitely not on the list. I definitely think it's something that is here to stay. I don't think that goes away. But I will say, and having only really done this with Williams, I can't speak for other companies, but our team in DC over the last 5 years that I've engaged with them, they pull you into those conversations. Mm-hmm. That's really important. Like, I think having leaders that understand the value of that and want to bring you into that conversation and not be like, hey, no, this, I'm the DC office, you go, you know, run your plant. I think having the awareness and understanding the value that can bring is really, really important. And so I've been lucky enough to work with people like that who have said, you know, even CHFC, like, hey, Brian, you need to go do this. And mm-hmm. here's how you're going to do it. And I'll help you and I'll support you. But your voice and your understanding of the issues is what these people need to hear. And so go do it. I'll help staff it. I'll help you mm-hmm. navigate the Hill. I'll help you talk to the right people.
Hard enough to keep up with the names. Figuring that out.
Yeah, right? Exactly. But you know, they have the relationships and we lean on them. And so you have to have that. And I don't think that's going anywhere. If anything, it gets more and more important as time goes on.
I'm glad you highlighted that partnership because you do need the navigators, like policy, government affairs, frontline specialists know the nuance. Whereas in the boardroom, this stuff looks easy. Oh, go get so-and-so to vote for X. It's like, no, this is just like a whole world of like horse trading and engagement. But that partnership between the specialists and the operationally charged executives is really important. So I love hearing that. That strikes me as a lesson learned of the last 4 years, is that as an evolution. What advice would you give to smaller oil and gas companies who are just now starting something that looks like a new energy ventures? If they're like, oh, I just got your job, what should I do? What should I not screw up? What would you tell them?
That's such a good question. When you add that descriptor of a small oil and gas company, that probably changes my answer a little bit, because you don't have the luxury probably of being able to cast a wider net. You don't have the capital or the balance sheet or the freedom or, you know, whatever support to go do some of the things that maybe we've been able to. I do think, looking back, you've got to quickly figure out like what works and what doesn't for your company. And you can do that without having to go make crazy investments and do a bunch of things. I think it's really an inward kind of reflection of what are we? What are we good at? What value do we add today in what we do? And how can I translate that into some other, you know, industry or sector or whatever it might be? And so if you don't have that kind of competitive advantage or that edge, somebody else does, and you're not going to be able to just like sneak into this space. And so use your assets, use your land, use your people, whatever it is that you bring to the table, only you will understand that. And you'll have to understand how do you get value out of that in these new areas. But I would say you do have to stay very focused, because there's a lot of really cool stuff, like just cool technology, cool things to go chase and run after, that at the end of the day can just be distractions. And so you've got to be very focused. And you do have to make those kind of hard decisions sometimes, of somebody comes to you with an idea, and the last thing you want to do is be the one shooting people down. Like you're kind of viewed internally as like the person who's imaginative and creative and going to go do these cool commercial things. You don't want to be the one saying no, but sometimes you have to. Sometimes you have to stay very focused and allocate your time based on the best outcomes you can achieve. So that would be part of my advice. I think the other part of it would be the amount of time that I had the privilege to spend with our executive team, just trying to understand like what do they want out of NEV? What does that mean to them? Like, is this a growth vehicle? Is this window dressing? Is this like, what do you want? We can do any of those things. We can get rated really well based on sustainability report and all these raters and rankers. Sure, we can position ourselves for that. We can position ourselves as the best midstream company in energy transition. We can position ourselves as the energy transition company, period. Like what are your expectations? And I think once you can kind of gain an understanding of that, and not all their answers are going to be the same, especially when you've got a diverse executive team who has different things in mind, but coming to some center point of all those opinions, I think is really, really important. So that's how I thought about it. And I think that's helped me kind of navigate the overall process going through it. And what my recommendation would be is clarity on what are expectations, and then staying focused and not letting the kind of fringy things distract you.
And I imagine that also is iterative, helping the executive team, helping the board understand like, what do they want? Because in many ways, when people were embarking upon this, they didn't know what they wanted. They just knew there's the societal expectation. And then, you know, how do we meet it? And then going from there, the other thing that I find very provocative for me to give some thought about is, we talked about the importance of being sort of oil and gas adjacent to your strengths. And what your advice to a small company is like being hyper adjacent. Like, what is adjacent to your unique assets and skill sets that you're going to leverage? So I'm going to think about, maybe if you see hyper adjacent in my work, you'll know we coined it here together.
Perfect. But I'll wait for that royalty check to show up.
Yeah, that's perfect. Really important. Yeah, that's like a really important nuance, though, that I mean, because it's super easy to flail about. There's just so much to join, so many things to chase. So that's really interesting. Okay, I want to go back to your talking a little bit about this idea that you can't be the guy that says no. I hadn't thought of that. That's really interesting. Like, oh, he's the wild man. We're supposed to bring our bright ideas to him. So talk a little bit about what you've learned from interaction with the workforce. And what advice do you have for our listeners who want to be wildly successful today under the rules of today, but who are positioning themselves to be your go-tos for tomorrow? Are they the people bringing you the wild ideas, or is there something else? Give them some advice, because this is a real challenge for a lot of oil and gas employees. The world is telling them you're in a dying industry. They believe and are advocating for the future of our industry, but they don't want to accidentally get left behind. So how do you think about that? And what's your advice for them?
It's a really interesting question, Tisha, because I struggle with this myself. You know, I took this role, I've been in this role for 4 years, and I've worked on all things energy transition for Williams, which is a gas infrastructure company, right? Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't a logical step. and I was probably, you know, maybe underprepared in terms of just the technology. And so I'd say for me, if you're interested in this space, just stay, like, find a way to plug into it. There's so much out there, whether that's through local groups. Like here in Tulsa, we have a group called Tulsa Innovation Labs. Like, it's basically just like building an ecosystem around energy transition, mm-hmm. Houston Greentown Labs, like things like that. Like, find a way to plug into those ecosystems and just sponge, like just listen, just absorb it, get to know the people, build those networks. I think that's really important. Honestly, the hard part about this isn't necessarily the technology or forming those relationships. It's more about, like, can you find a way to make money doing it as a company, right? Can you build an asset that can actually generate revenue on par with what, you know, your base business can do? And so that I think is the much more challenging part of this. Like, if you want to be a part of new energy ventures, like, what should your resume look like? How should you prepare for that? I don't think there's a right answer. I think it's like, be really smart people, be willing to challenge some norms, be willing to get really uncomfortable at times and stretch yourself. But look at the people on my team. These are all people that are Williams employees who came from Williams, who knew the base business. They knew how to be commercial thinkers. It's just taking those skills and applying them to a new subject. And so those are things that you can figure out. I do think, though, just having like a base level of knowledge on some of the technology, on the policy, on, honestly, you want to join NEV, go learn tax policy, like bring that skill to my team. Like, I've learned more about tax in the last 4 years than I've ever cared to know. And so, like, there are little things like that that you can plug into that I think are non-traditional to what we would do in the oil and gas business, at least not for me as a engineer and a business development person. Like, I never really thought about tax. So there are little niche things you can plug into, but I would also say, like, don't overthink it. Like, there's nothing really that magical about it. It's business, and you'll figure it out.
Well, it's interesting because really what you're saying is what I'm observing now. I have this weird little business where everyone that we hired, you know, is working at this like perpetually evolving space. But essentially what you're saying is, like, don't expect a linear trajectory. Like, you're going to learn tax, you're going to learn policy, you're going to figure out how to make money. Like, these are all, like, we're all going to be the Renaissance people of the energy transition if we want to be successful. I think that's really cool. And kudos to Williams, who's investing in things like Tulsa Innovation Lab, Avatar, which I sit on the advisory board for. So these are things also near and dear to my heart, where we create playgrounds for our employees to get to workshop this stuff, which I love. Okay, another question for you. When I wrote my last book, David Victor, who's a professor at UC San Diego, said that oil and gas companies are not well-suited to new energy ventures because they are too incentivized to defend the status quo, and they're not designed to innovate and take that kind of risk. So you're proving that wrong, which, David Victor, if you're listening, I just wanted to say, I told you so.
God, David.
But I have a ton of respect for David. I'd love to be challenged by him. So he'll probably be back on to tell me why I'm wrong. But Brian, what do you say about that, given your lived experience of the last 4 years?
I don't think he's all wrong. I definitely think some of the things he says there make sense to me. And I've run into some of those challenges here. I mean, you're a big, at times, clunky organization. It's matrixed. It's hard to navigate. It's hard to create new processes and new procedures. And so there's some truth to that. That's probably the only truth, though, in my opinion. Like, I feel like in terms of who's capable of tackling these challenges, who's capable of operating complex energy systems, I don't think people appreciate how complex the overall energy systems are that we take for granted every day. And so we Williams, but also we industry, have been doing this forever. And so to think that somebody else is going to just step in and figure that out and then figure out the new technology alongside it, and, oh, by the way, do all of that in a reliable and affordable way, like, good luck. If you know what, if somebody can do it, please. Like, I'm sure we'd be happy to, like, reap the benefits of that, but I don't see that happening. And so I think for us, we saw that as an opportunity to say, yeah, again, like, we're not here to make natural gas go away. That's not realistic. We're about, like, I always hear this term, like, a just transition. Like, that makes a ton of sense to me. I don't love how it, like, rolls off the tongue, but ultimately, like, we're here to show that natural gas is the energy transition solution. There are ways to continue to make it better. There's ways to continue to clean up our business. There's ways to change policy and regulation that will make people clean up their business. But if you're serious about any real outcome, this is the outcome. And so I totally disagree with kind of the overall statement he's making. And I think it really comes back to the people. Like, there's so many intelligent, just thoughtful, creative people who have continued to make the oil and gas industry a better place. They're going to do the same thing regardless of what types of assets we are owning or operating. And so it ultimately is in our best interest to move towards that decarbonized future. And we're going to do that regardless of whether that, you know, makes natural gas obsolete in some distant future, fine. But ultimately, our company is going to be there to continue to provide that same level of service, that same reliability, that same kind of energy system understanding that is not going to be replicated.
Yeah, I completely agree. So
good.
way to hit the softball. I lobbed at you. But in that spirit, not every company is leaning into this. Some companies are still sort of wired for the political fight, right? I see it as defending the past, and it's a choice and you can make it. But when you're out there, are there efforts that you wish more companies were leaning into just to make your life easier? Or is it actually fine for some companies to move away from the pack by embracing a decarbonizing future?
Yeah, I think I'd say the latter, at least selfishly. It makes my job and it makes Williams probably shine in that instance where people, you know, there's certain companies that say, we're not even going to participate. We're going to heads down, focus on what we do today. And this is all a fad, or this is all just, you know, talk. That's fine. I don't know that that's helpful for the industry overall, but I think as a company, you know, that's their decision to make. And I'm sure that they have reasons why they're doing that. So we definitely have the reasons why we're doing what we're doing. And I'm very, not only supportive, but proud of it. I'm proud to be a part of that team and proud to be kind of like carry that message for Williams. So I love that. In terms of things that I wish that people would lean into more, I would say sort of adjacent to the gov affairs side of things, I think just communications and mm-hmm. branding and just how we message what we're doing is really, really, really valuable. Our team here, and I'm not a name dropper, but Laura Kriegmer on our team, she is an unbelievable person to work with, incredibly smart, but also just she brings a perspective that's very different than historical oil and gas. Mm-hmm. She challenges how we talk, what we talk about, what words we use, and how to connect with people. I think there's a messaging to investors, and then there's a messaging to like people. Like, what do you mm-hmm. want to resonate with people? And they're the ones who are ultimately going to be pushing for these changes. And whether that's policy changes or who they're electing or how much do they want to pay for their electricity or their gas, like they're the ones who will be impacted by everything that we are doing. And so if you can connect with them on a level that resonates, I think that's more valuable than anything else that we're doing. You have to be able to talk to people. And so that team, I wish others could copy and paste what we're doing. Selfishly, I'm glad they don't, because I think it helps us shine mm-hmm. and it gives us a podium and a voice, mm-hmm. which I love that. But if others would kind of take what we're doing and take what her and her team are doing and shine that same light on the messaging, I think that would be, you know, paid 10 times over in value to the overall industry.
I think you're right, because my observation of Laura and team's approach, which I also admire, and I spend my days telling industry what to do differently in this arena. So this is a noteworthy exception, is the acknowledging one, the skepticism, right? We operate in a world that's skeptical about our companies. They're skeptical that we're sincere. They're skeptical that we want to continue to provide decarbonizing energy. And ultimately, they're all individual humans, you know, with like an emotional take on energy. And I think the way Williams engages is like very human, like, but, you know, very focused on connection, which is really different than a lot of the things we do, which is kind of try to explain, like, let us explain to you. That emotional connection is just so valuable. I totally agree. On that note of we're going to imagine a future where an industry is up leveling its communications after Laura teaches her masterclass, I have a final question for you that I ask all my guests. Brian, what are you most optimistic about?
That's a long list. There's a lot of opportunity out there and things that keep me kind of motivated and moving forward. I think maybe this is like the dad part of me coming out. Like I was never passionate about my job or about decarbonization or energy transition or any of those things. That never really, like, a job was a job to me. I think this role has pushed me out of that. And you kind of almost have like a higher calling of like, can you really answer the questions that are being asked of you? And not for me or even for my kids, maybe, but like my kids' kids. And I think about like the future of what this could turn into and the problems that we're trying to solve and the challenges ahead of us. I mean, it's the greatest challenge that my generation will ever face is trying to answer these questions. And so when I think about like, what am I optimistic about? Like, what do I think could really drive outcomes? I think about more of like the future workforce. And I think about kind of where we started a little bit of this, like how do you continue to bring talent and how do you continue to situate your company to be successful in the future? It all comes back to the people for me. I mean, I'm a big believer in not only bringing the right people, but developing those people and getting them to a point where they can make real contributions to the company, but also just to like the broader goals that we've set as an industry. And so that's what I'm optimistic about, is like finding a way to continue to build the bench, continue to bring strength and continue to challenge the next generation of engineers and accountants and lawyers and tax professionals and everybody else. Like, we get painted with such a bad broad brush of like, oh, you're oil and gas, like, mm-hmm. that's going away in 5 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the ability to connect with that next group of folks. And I do think about my kids and their age and like, what are they learning in school? And how can we make sure that we're messaging to them a realistic view of where things are going and how they can be a part of literally solving the most important challenges our generation will ever face. So I'm super optimistic about like the opportunity and the potential there. It's also a huge challenge. There's not an easy kind of answer to that or a button to push to just make it happen. So you have to be very intentional. It's why I'm proud of what we do here. We're very intentional about how we engage with universities, how we engage with our communities, how we make sure we're getting people educated and preparing them to ultimately help us solve these problems. So that's kind of what I'm optimistic about and kind of what drives me to keep moving forward on this stuff.
I love that. The picture you painted for me is, I've been talking a lot this year about competing apocalypses. You know, there's like the climate apocalypse on one side. And then there's sometimes industries, I think, ill-advised counter to that, which is like, everyone, we're going to break the energy system and everyone's going to freeze in the dark. And what you're really saying is like, in a world of those competing apocalypses, like what we're doing matters, like solving this and providing a path, a pragmatic, executable path. It's what wakes me up in the morning also. And so I love the way you've named that. And if it was easy, well, other people could do it. But since it's not easy, let's us do it.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And I think like pick your favorite apocalypse. I think if you've got the right people focused on solving whatever that problem is, like you're going to get it figured out. I don't care which side of the aisle or which movement you're a part of. It doesn't matter. Like, get the right people, the right smart, like talented, focused people on the right issues, and you'll get it figured out.
Awesome, Brian. Thank you so much for joining me on the Energy Thinks podcast.
You bet. Thanks, Tisha. Great to talk with you. Thanks for having me.
That's our episode for today. Thanks so much to Brian Levinka for joining me. One of the things I found compelling in this conversation is the way Brian doesn't take the bait around political polarization. Instead, he just talks about the future and executing and moving forward. And I think that there's a lot we could all learn from just sidestepping those charged conversations and instead talking about what we can do. Enjoying what you're hearing? I'd love it if you took a moment to rate and review us. It helps your colleagues in the oil and gas industry find us. If you'd like to know more about our work at Adamantine, please visit us at energythinks.com. I'd like to thank Kayla Chives for making this podcast possible. Until next time, I'm Tisha Schuler, wishing you and yours happiness, prosperity, and good health.